Thank you. I was born in Carversville, Pennsylvania, on July the 4th, 1912. My father was an MD. He got his medical degree from the University of Pennsylvania in 1906 and practiced in Carversville for 5 or 6 years, and we then moved to New Hope, and I've been a native of New Hope ever since. I went to grade school here and to high school here. I then went to the State Teachers College in East Stroudsburg and graduated with a degree in physical education in 1934. I came back to New Hope briefly, and economic conditions in those years were quite bad, and I got an opportunity for a job in Washington as a clerk with a congressman. This was in 1935. I naturally accepted it because teaching jobs were few and far between and paid very, very little. So I went to Washington with this Congressman Fry, Oliver Fry, F-R-E-Y, in 35, and stayed with him until 1938. And he was defeated in an election then, and I stayed in Washington. And got a job and worked for the firm of Julius Garfinkel and Company, which is a large department store, for a couple of years. And I then I wanted to get back in government service and was fortunate enough to get on the staff of the Library of Congress. And I worked in the library for about 3 years. And then along comes the Pearl Harbor Day, and I was married at that time. I got married in 1939 to Francis Hickok, who came originally from Ohio. And but we had no children. Consequently, I was subject to the draft, and I, as soon as I could, joined the Navy. And but the library was an appointment situation, and I had not the security of a job to come back to after I was through with my Navy tour of duty. So I took a number of civil service examinations after I'd enlisted in the Navy. And I ended up there with the Treasury Department, Bureau of Customs. And I worked with Customs for 6-8 months, and then to the Navy for 3 years. And due to an eye problem, I never got any sea duty. I spent 3 years actually on the East Coast. And after my discharge from the Navy, I went back to the Customs Service and worked in the port of Norfolk, Virginia. And after Norfolk, I came back to Pennsylvania and worked in the port of Philadelphia until my retirement in 1962. My roots are here. They always have been. I love New Hope. I love the area. And now, while working for Customs in Philadelphia, I first lived in Washington Crossing, Pennsylvania. My father was the superintendent. He was still a physician, but he was also a superintendent of Washington Crossing Park. And my wife and I lived briefly in one of the houses, one of the old houses in the park.
Oh, you
were
there in Washington?
That's right. We lived there for maybe 3 or 4 years, something like that. And then after my father passed away, we came to this house, 26 North Main Street, which my father bought 1924 for $4,000, and it's now valued at between $160,000 and $175,000.
Oh,
but I have no intention of selling it because I expect to spend the rest of my life here. And my wife and I were married for 37 years. We had no children, And she died of cancer in 1975. And so I've just gone on here, and since my retirement, I actually have been busier than when I was working. But I'm working at things that I enjoy doing. And this time I'm the boss. I'm not working for someone else. And my jobs, the things that I do now, include the chairmanship of the borough's historic zoning board. And I'm what is known as, I've been a board member of the Bucks County Council on the Arts for a number of years. At one time was vice chairman. My term ran out on that board, and I have been recently appointed what's called registrar emeritus, and am in charge of the county's permanent collection of paintings. Now, at the Rodman House. And to clarify that, I am not an artist. I don't know how to draw or paint, but I have been exposed to art ever since I was a child. My father's avocation was painting. He was a good painter and exhibited professionally. He at the Phillips Mill in New Hope, and at one time had work accepted at the Pennsylvania Academy in Philadelphia.
I didn't know that. Your father was an artist.
This is his work, yeah. These are his, this is his work. Well, it's coming down 232. There's no house there any longer. There was a, that house was demolished. A truck hit it.
Oh.
It came down the hill.
Down the hill. Yes, of course. Now I see that.
And the river's in the back. Yeah.
There.
But he is responsible for my interest in art and took me to many museums. And since his death, I have traveled quite a little bit, especially in Europe, and seen many of the fine collections in Austria, Germany, Italy, Morocco, Egypt, Spain, Portugal, and so I do have a deep interest in art, and I must say I think I've learned a little bit about it. So that will continue, and also I the Continental Bank here in town has an Artist of the Month program, and I run that. I run that, yeah. But now, my father was born in Carversville. The McGill family in Solbury Township goes back to 1726. My great-great-great-great grandfather, William McGill, came to Solbury Township in 1726. He, from genealogical records that I'm not terribly interested in, but just happen to know about, he came to Pennsylvania with Penn's people and first settled in Bristol. He was a tailor. But he became interested in farming and went to Solbury Township. And he was a member of Buckingham Meeting, and I've never been able to locate his remains. And there, I didn't look that hard, but he probably is buried in the Buckingham Friends burying ground.
Is that the one on Sudan, or is that?
That's going out the highway on the right, just beyond Lahaska. You know, Buckingham Friends School.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, there's a burying ground behind that. And anyway, the McGill homestead is between Peter's Corner and Carversville on the left, going toward Carversville. You live at Peter's Corner?
Yes, I live at Peter's Corner.
Uh-huh. Well, there are, the way you'd identify it, there are two concrete stanchions that used to have a gate. They may be covered now, but I don't think they are. Anyway, it was 100 acres when I was a kid, and but it's been cut up now and sold off into lots of maybe 20 or 30 acres left. But my recollections, I can remember riding from Carversville to New Hope and back in a horse and buggy. And it's about 7 miles. My guess is that it was close to 2 hours, an hour and a half to 2 hours. It was uphill a lot, you know, to Solbury, what we call Solbury Center Hill. And a lot of that was uphill. And I was about 3 years old when my recollections of living in Carversville are very, very dim. I know where the house is. It's on the corner. Going into town, you would make a left to go to the post office and Raymond Barger's place. It's right, it's the house I was born in, and then the old Rockefeller's Hall, and then the big Barger stone place. And we did go to the Christian church there. And but as I say, moved to New Hope when I was 3 years old. And you know, I have childhood memories of New Hope. I think one of the main things that when I was 6 years old in 1918, early in 1918, my mother took me. We lived on Bridge Street, where there's an Italian restaurant across from where the post office was. Well, that's where we lived. Across the other side of the canal, in that painting there, if you look to your left, to the right is a building where there is a gift shop now that has a lot of copper out front. All right, there lived in that building at that time a man who later turned out to be the best-known primitive painter in the East, at least the Eastern United States, Joseph Pickett. And my mother took me over there to see Mr. Pickett's paintings. I remember that very clearly. And he was more or less laughed at, huh? No, Joe. Joe, there is a Ben Pickett, but he's a distant nephew. And he actually died in 1918. This was early 1918 when I saw his work. And he was very serious about it. And the artists in the area at the time more or less made fun of him. And he was totally, had no training. But the essence of a primitive painting is really, to me, is sincerity. And that he did have that. And there are only two of his works in existence. One is in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and I thought the other one was in the Brooklyn Museum, but I'm not sure. It could be in another museum in Manhattan. They're both, I'm almost certain, in New York. And they're almost priceless. Now, the painters of the Valley first started to come here, 1895, and I guess probably one of the earliest was Mr. Lathrop, and then came Garber and Redfield and Spencer and Braden, and these were all of the, well, it's gotten around now to where it's called the New Hope School, and it's impressionistic, post-impressionistic work. And not surprisingly, these men, the majority of them, studied in France with the French Impressionists. Mr. Lathrop's wife, I think, came from France. I know Mr. Redfield's wife was French. And the New Hope School has really held up tremendously. There was just recently an exhibition of just New Hope School paintings. In Allentown. I don't think it went to Harrisburg. The full exhibition was in Allentown. It then went to the Corcoran in Washington, and from there to the Brandywine. And the one at the Brandywine was cut down because the number of paintings were cut down because the quarters, they didn't have the space to take the whole show, but it was a remarkably fine exhibition. I'm not sure. I don't know. I think they have a very fine collection. Dick Stewart, did a remarkable job. Now, he's been dead for, what, 5-6 months, maybe? Yeah. And but he started this gallery, and his widow, Adelaide, is there, and she's running the gallery, and she has help with it. And they also had some of the fine painters of the New Hope School. And he's got a especially good Lathrop's, I think, and Leith Ross and Follansbee. Now, Follansbee is just on the edge of being the New Hope School, and I think Leith Ross is a little bit late, but they were all, you know, very fine painters.
Now, by the New Hope School, you mean the
painters that painted the New Hope School
for
part of the school? 1895, yeah, something. Up through the mid to late 20s, yeah. And it does not necessarily totally geographic. Now, one of the good ones was Walter Emerson Baum, who came from Sellersville, B-A-U-M, that's right. And he was a Sellersville man. And but most of the others were from right within the area here.
I wonder if any Mr. Baum's work.
Well, I'm sure there's some in Sellersville because his son, Bert Baum, has a small museum out there.
Very good to know that.
Yeah.
It's good not to let these things get lost.
That's correct. Now, and the Rodman House in the permanent collection has one or maybe two Baums, one for sure.
Good.
Yeah. We also have a Garber and a Redfield. And the difficult one to find is Robert Spencer, who was really one of the best, to my way of thinking. Was one of the best of the whole group. And there aren't that many pieces of his work around. They're all privately, mainly private. There's some in galleries, but they're mainly privately owned. Mr. Redfield painted in this area mainly snow scenes. And he did go out very early in the morning and stay there all day, no matter how cold it was. And he painted big. I mean, 30, 36, up as high as 48 inches on line. He stayed out all day, he wore felt boots, and he painted with gloves on, with fabric gloves, yes. I remember seeing this. Now, this is the mid-20s. In the spring and summer, he went to Maine and painted summer scenes up there. Now, Mr. Garber, who was contemporary of his, and they were compared to some degree. Their style was to me, was really quite different. But Garber painted around here in the summer, and his sycamore trees are just beautiful, and he's well, very well known for that. In the wintertime, Garber was an etcher. He was impressed. Yeah. And there's still, I believe, quite a few etchings of Garber's in existence. He has a son living and a daughter living, and I believe the son has the etching collection. Yeah.
Still around.
And I think they, yeah, oh yeah, most of they kept track of this stuff.
Do I understand that Mr. Garber lived at the Cuddalosa Trail, or is that someone else?
He lived at Cuddalosa.
He did?
Yeah.
Cuddalosa?
Cuddalosa, that's right. Yeah.
Well,
all over, yeah, sycamores up there and up all along the river. There were many, and you find a great many of his paintings with the sycamores show the river and quarries across the Jersey side as background pieces.
There are two paintings of Redfield's on the walls at the
Pearl Buckhorn. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I think there are more spring things that he did probably in New England than he did around here. It's not to say that he didn't do spring work around here, because he did. And he was a very particular person and would only let his best work in the world. He destroyed a lot of paintings. When he, well, he did, they didn't work, come up to his standard. And he destroyed these, to my best of my knowledge, after he had stopped painting. See, he lived to be 95 or 96, something like that. Mr. Redfield was born in 1869 and died in 1965. He came to Philadelphia from Delaware after studying the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts, and in Paris, he settled with his French wife in Center Bridge, fishing, trapping, gardening, and crafting to make ends meet. He carried an easel with him to record impressions. Abandoning academic limitations, he painted fresh, vibrant, often windy landscapes.
Okay. I think that it was interesting that you read that from the 50th anniversary retrospective art exhibit publication. And it was published evidently by the Phillips Mill Community Association in New Hope, Pennsylvania, as a 50th anniversary of the Phillips Mill Community Association.
That's correct.
And this is a very beautiful publication. This painting on the cover
is a Redfield.
Is a Redfield.
Of the mill.
Scene. Isn't that? Oh, yes.
That's on Phillips Mill.
Isn't that just beautiful? And we're still having exhibits at this time at the mill.
That's correct.
And at Phillips Mill. And in fact, that's really sort of been turned into a museum in a way.
It is a gallery. That's right. But the mill was started, I forget what year it started, but I think right after World War One. And it was begun as a totally social organization for people who lived around Phillips Mill. And it was used in addition to art exhibitions. They had dramatic presentations. They had musicals and that sort of thing.
It was all the arts.
That's right. That's right.
Including theater?
Yes, yeah, productions. Drama. That's right. They still do productions there.
Test runs too, if that's what they're called, of plays. Is that right?
They have, but not. Usually they just do a. They have for years done an original production once a year. Local people write it, but not with the intention of ever taking it to Broadway or anything like that.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
That they're written by local people.
Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah.
And so they encourage arts.
That's right. At the mill. That's right. Indeed.
Right.
Indeed.
Well,
in the main, they have been written by Emily Leith Ross, who was the widow of Harry Leith Ross, one of our finest painters, and Dorothy Schlesinger Sommer, who has written the music. And then they did, on a couple of occasions, they did known things like Charlie's Aunt or Late George Appley and things like that. But most of the work has been original by those two people. They wrote the bulk of everything that was done there.
How wonderful that they have.
In fact, they're still doing. They worked the show over this past last April.
There was one that was getting rave notices. I can't remember. Was it something about F. Scott Fitzgerald's
play? Oh, that was a different group, and they were not officially connected with the mill. They rented the mill. This is the thing I think you're talking about, of people who were trying to prepare something for the professional stage.
Yeah.
But they used the mill, but it was not mill members who did that.
I see.
Yes.
And that organization is still very much
in effect, very
successful.
Yes. They have dances, they have cover dish suppers, and I belonged to it when my wife's living, but I no longer do, but it's for fun. But and they have they used to have two exhibitions a year. I believe they only have one exhibition now yearly. And it's a jury show. It's a truly professional exhibition.
What do you think of the arts today?
We do. One of the finest is, to my way of thinking, is a man named Nelson Shanks. He was in New Hope for, maybe 10 years, and he's now living, I don't know whether he's still in Bucks County or not, it's on the Biddle Estate down along the river, Andalusia, and I think it's near the Bucks County line. And also, there are a lot of good painters around here.
Is that where he lives?
Mm-hmm.
And what's his name again?
Nelson Shanks, S-H-A-N-K-S.
Nelson Shanks.
Yes.
Nice.
Very fine painter.
I teach at college very near.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I have to go through Andalusia to get
there. Yeah. Well, he lives on one of the farms of the Biddle Estate.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, I don't know about the commercial artists now. I would say one of the most successful here in the area would be Ranulph Bai. He's very well known, he sells well, and he's done a number of books, and there's one called The Vanishing Station, in which he did a series of, maybe 10 or a dozen of the old railroad stations. In fact, it's being published now by the Smithsonian. I saw it down there when I was last in the... Yeah. And his Ranulph's wife, Glenda Lyme, is also a very fine painter. In the sculpture line, we have a man in Salisbury named George Antonissen, who is becoming very well known in sculpture. And painters, Paul Matthews is from the upper part of the county. And down by Washington Crossing is Charles Wells, who is both a sculptor and a painter and an etcher. This is one of his etchings here.
Oh, I was looking at that.
That's one of Charles Wells' works.
And what was the subject?
A person, no particular person.
I also love the work.
Now, his name is Agin, A-G-I-N, Karkif Agin, and he lives in Lambertville. He works at many different things. He's a carpenter and heaven knows what all. And he really doesn't paint as much as he should, but that you can't do anything about that. Now, Antonissen, Wells, and Matthews are having a three-man show starting in October at the Rodman House. And this will be three of the finest in the valley getting together with Wells will show sculpture and painting, and Tonison sculpture only, in Matthews just painting. But that's going to be an outstanding show.
And speaking of the pictures above that were painted by our Lambertville man, it seems that we are very gracious to one another across the river, and that the artists in New Hope are very interested in the artists in Lambertville.
There is a coalition being started. They met a month and a half, 2 months ago to get, not, it sounds almost like a union, but it isn't, but they're just going to coordinate and tell each other what hours they're going to be open, and every artist does different type of work, and they will, if a potential client is looking for a certain thing, say, well, I don't do this, but so-and-so in Lambertville does. And the artistic community in Lambertville is, I would say, on the way up. As a matter of fact, Lambertville's on the way up. What the restoration that they've done with buildings and things has just been outstanding. One of the things that's a little disappointing as regards New Hope is that Lambertville has better buildings to work with. There are more fine stone and brick buildings in Lambertville than there are in New Hope. Now, there are in New Hope places like the Parry Mansion, which is 1784, it's the headquarters of the New Hope Historical Society,
right,
of which I was once president. I forget what year. It was.
Wonderful.
That and the Logan Inn, and Ken Leiby's house, and the house on the building on the corner next to Leiby's, which is now sadly a toy store. I have nothing against toy stores, but it just seems that that on the corner was built before the Civil War. It's one of the best buildings in town. Oh, sure is. And then at the corner of Mechanic Street in South Main is the oldest house in New Hope. And
what house is that?
Well,
does it have a name?
No, it's Betty James lives there. Mrs. Alfred Clark James. It's the oldest home, but it's not as old as Logan Inn. Logan Inn is probably, I think, is older than any of these.
You think that was the first building up in New Hope?
No, Logan no. Inn? Parts of it could have been. I don't know for sure about that, but it was on Ferry Street, you see, and that's all this. There was no Bridge Street, and there was no Main Street. I mean, the ferry crossed the Ferry Street, and it was logical to build the inn close by, and
probably people walked up from the ferry.
That's right, and they came in by stage, you see, and this was the main route from Philadelphia up to New York, the York Road.
The York Road, yes.
Yeah, was the main route.
And of course, originally they crossed the.
Oh yes, that's right. The ferry was now there was Charles Wells. There was there was somebody before Wells, and then after Wells, Coryell. Coryell's ferry, and after Coryell, they lost the name Coryell's ferry. It became New Hope. The Parry family owned the Parry building, which is the headquarters of the Historical Society. That's 1784. Their business was a grist mill, grinding grain, which the mill was the present Bucks County Playhouse. And between this, what is now the Golden Door Gallery, was the carriage house for the Parry family. And but that grist mill burned down, and he rebuilt it and decided to call it the New Hope Mills. And that's what they tell us is how New Hope got its name. And
originally it was the Hope Mills.
It's still ground. They used it to grind grain up until 1938. After the parish were long gone.
Really?
Oh, there was an old Mr. Brown. Oh yeah, it was 1937 or 8, and then it was empty, and then they worked it over, and the Bucks County Playhouse opened in 1939.
Do you remember when the Playhouse opened?
Oh yeah, yes.
What did you think of the Playhouse opening?
Oh, I thought it was great, and I've always been highly in favor of it. Yeah, it was in the spring, probably April or May of 1939, and the first manager of it was St. John Terrell, who later ran the Lambertville Music Circus. The second manager was Richard Bennett, who was not here long, and he was the father of Constance Bennett and her son, Jim Bennett. And after that, there were a couple of... can't tell you who the Theron Bamberger. That's right. They had it for a long time. I don't know whether Phyllis is listening. She might be alive. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I understand Mr. Bamberger had a very strange and unusual death, in that he had an accident and didn't pay much attention to it and then died of his injuries.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I remember very clearly the first production, the first play was an old thing called Springtime for Henry. Edward Everett Horton.
I remember him well from the
Edward Everett Horton.
Were there ever other people that seeing perhaps in your book?
Well,
or on the stage, or as visitors here in the
community. People wouldn't remember. There was a very fine actress named Pauline Lord, and she goes way back. One of the best that I thought was Walter Slezak. He came here many summers. I believe he did. And Lou Calhern was a very fine actor. And he had a Barrymore profile, and he was a very, very good actor. But people forget real fast, you know. And of course, the writers and like Moss Hart and George Kaufman lived within 3 or 4 miles of here.
They were here
Yeah, not too much before, and they were here after it was open.
How about Don Walker? When did Don Walker come to
this? Don Walker came here when he was born.
Oh, he was?
Yes.
Oh, I thought he was a newcomer.
No, his father came from England.
Oh, I see.
And the father's brother, Don's uncle, the two brothers came from England, and they opened two grocery stores. There was one in New Hope and one in Lambertville. Reginald Walker had the New Hope store, and Don's father, Tom Walker, had the Lambertville store. And I don't know that, I don't know if Don's father had any particular musical talent or not. His uncle, Reginald, was a violinist of some worth, and had played oboe in a British Army band. But they had, as I say, these two markets, and they were very fine, very top cuts of meat and all the rest of it. And but lived down south of New Hope. Well, Tom Walker, his father, I believe Don lived in Lambertville early on, and went to the University of Pennsylvania.
Did he study music there?
I don't know if he did or not. I know he played in the band, but with the senior Dr. Petrie, who's a dentist up here.
Oh, yes.
Well, Fred Petrie and I are our lifelong friends. That's the elder Petrie, I'm 73. I guess Fred's 74 now. But he and Don were in the Penn Band at the same time. And and I'm not sure whether, I don't think his major was music. I'm not sure, but he was.
He was a musician.
Oh, yeah, one of the best, and still does work, you know.
And what was his instrument? Do you remember what instrument he played?
I don't know.
I always thought of him as playing piano.
No, he played it, and I don't know what it was, but of course his forte was arranging. That's what he did. He was arranged for Broadway shows without parallel. I mean, he was probably the best in the business, and still does some work.
Yes.
And Audrey, his wife, they live in a little town here, and had a son and a daughter. The daughter is Mrs. Leopold.
One of our towns.
That's right, we're on the council. Yeah. Incidentally, I'm running for mayor in New Hope too. So put that in the book. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that.
I've been active as a Democrat since 19. I cast my first vote for Roosevelt in 1932, and I never ran for an office. And so this thing opened up, and I thought, well, you know, why not? It's not going to kill me if I don't get it, and if I get it, it'll be something to keep busy with, you know. Well, thank you. Well, we'll see. I don't know. I have to wait until November.
When will you start your campaign?
Well, right after Labor Day. The election is in November, and people forget so quickly. And I think when the signal at the end of the summer is Labor Day, then we'll start to put some pressure on it, see what we can do.
Any way I can help you.
Well, you're very kind.
You put me on your list.
Yeah. Do you work at anything else? I mean, what you're doing? I mean, are you just retired? Oh yeah. You teach where? What's your subject? Well, you drive down 95 to Street Road and make a left? And
let me think. I have found, yes, I go Street Road to the River Road and then 95 to, what exit is it? Woodhaven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's
over. Yeah, yeah.
So I have to go through one end of Andalusia.
Sure do, and I'm not sure whether this is relevant or not, but it won't hurt to leave it on the tape, I guess. I had the privilege in May of being chosen by Peter Kossmeyer, our congressman, to go to Washington as what is known as a senior intern. Yeah, and this is a yearly thing that every congressman and senator is may invite one senior citizen from their district to go to Washington for a week. Meet every day, morning and afternoon, and conferences and lectures with senators and representatives who are on the committees who are working for the aging. The thrust of this thing is that they're doing this because there are so many more people of age than there used to be, and it's a thing that they have finally recognized has to be dealt with. The fastest growing segment of our population is 85 and up. It's the fastest
That's
growing
true.
Segment. Now, and people want to live. The problem is, it costs so much to live. What I'm saying is that the things that make you live after you're 70 are good doctors and good drugs and good hospitals. And they're all very, very expensive. So these people are in talk and say, look, what are you going to do about it? Social Security is not the answer. I mean, it certainly shouldn't be cut. But it was never meant to be everything. It was not meant to be a person's total retirement. It was supposed to be a help toward it.
But I think if you can add to that, too, I think this is and that is proper diet.
Oh, sure. That's right. Sadly, they should know it, but the sad part of it is, in many cases, it's just a lack of intelligence. And they don't care. They're not interested. They say, you can't slough it off. It's true.
I have a niece who just wrote a book called Aging, Growing Old, Sober, Slowly. Mm-hmm. And it was published by this press up here that does Prevention Magazine.
Oh, yeah. What's his name? Bob Rodale.
Rodale Press.
I know him.
Yeah.
He's quite a guy.
She was one of the five, there were five editors, five writers in
yeah.
the book. And it's really a fascinating little
yeah,
book.
He has a magazine called Prevention.
Right.
Yeah, this is Bob Rodale.
I think that we as older people are getting a little smarter about
stuff. Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And the thing is, I think I almost learned more from, there were 250 of us at this thing. And I almost learned more from talking with the other people there than I did from the advice we got from members of Congress.
Oh, that would have been such a fun.
Oh, it's just
that.
Great because there's so many different attitudes from different parts of the country. And the people, the ones in the Midwest and the Far West are much more militant than we are in the
really?
East. Oh, yeah.
Especially in the Far West. Yeah.
here, if you belong to the AARP, you get the magazine and you get your prescriptions for cheaper. But these people out there, they meet every week, and they have their lobbyists, and things are really on the move.
It is a way of life.
That's right. It's right. A way.
I have a sister who lives in Southern California, yeah. And I've just come from there.
Yeah.
This poor soul was like over 200 pounds all her life.